Her winning streak, half a world away, has resonated with American race fans who voted her more popular than either Accelerate or Justify. We'll talk with the jockey of the Australian mare, Winx. Plus, you know that some horse owners are princes, like the Sheiks of Dubai, and others are relative paupers, like the group that owned Kentucky Derby winner Funnyside. But we're just learning now that several years ago, one four-year-old filly's owner was the Federal Bureau of Investigations, the FBI. And they weren't just interested in having good seats for the races either. We'll have all that and more on this edition of In the Gate.
They're in the gates. They're about to move in.
They roll side. And they're off.
As they move to the top of the stretch.
It's a head-bumping finish.
This is In the Gate, ESPN's Thoroughbred Racing Podcast. My name is Barry Abrams. You can follow me on Twitter at @BAbramsVoice or on Facebook at Barry Abrams Voice. You can also get us on our YouTube channel by searching In the Gate Podcast. You can get us on SoundCloud as well. Get us at the iTunes Store or TuneIn.com. You can get us on that little pink podcatcher app on your phone you didn't even know you had. And now you can subscribe to In the Gate in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. For the full In the Gate experience, subscribe now in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. She is an older daughter of Street Cry, who has a double-digit winning streak, comes from behind almost every time, hit her best stride as an older mare, and has become a household name in all corners of the racing world.
This is unbelievable! Zenyatta! What a performance! One we'll never forget! Looked impossible!
Wait, did you think we were talking about Zenyatta? Well, she certainly was all those things we mentioned, but the current it girl in the sport is the 8-year-old Australian mare, Winx.
600 metres to go in the Cox Plate. Rostropovich just in front of D'Argento Ben Battle. Now Bowman gets moving on Winx. She's only a length and a half to 2 lengths off the lead, followed by Savvy Cope. Rostropovich just in front of D'Argento, but here she comes, and the valley roars. Winx on the outside moves up, takes the lead from Ben Battle, then Rostropovich and D'Argento into the straight at the 200 metres. It's Winx in front by a length. Ben Battle's going with her. Winx three corners. Ben Battle. Winx is staving off Ben Battle. Cometh the hour. Cometh the legend. Greatness. Winx has done it. It's Equine Utopia. 2 lengths to Ben Battle.
That win in the Cox Plate, one of Australia's most prestigious races, was the fourth straight year she's won it. Winx has won 29 races in a row overall, 22 of which are Group 1s. Now, she's not undefeated. It's not that kind of streak. Remember, Zenyatta won her first 19 races before the legendary loss by a nose in the 2010 Breeders' Cup Classic to Blame. Winx has finished somewhere other than first 6 times in 39 starts, all of those in her younger days. She's a 3-time Australian Horse of the Year, and her popularity has even reached the United States, where her owners were presented with the Vox Populi Award, an honor started in 2010 by the owner of Secretariat, the late, great Penny Chenery. Vox Populi in Latin means voice of the people. According to the press release at Secretariat.com, Winx was the top choice among U.S. voters in addition to the internationals who voted. The other nominees, Justify, Accelerate, the 2 main Horse of the Year candidates here in the States, Monomoy Girl, and even the great filly Enable, the first to pull off the Arc de Triomphe Breeders' Cup Turf Double, both against males, of course. By the way, the first winner of the Vox Populi Award was that other daughter of Street Cry with the long winning streak. As Winx cranks up for what will almost undoubtedly be her final season, heck, can you believe that she's still going strong at age 8? It is our pleasure for the first time to welcome here to Win the Gate her regular rider, Hugh Bowman. What is it like to climb aboard this mare?
You know, for me it doesn't feel any different than it did to start with, really. I mean, obviously the expectation, but actually riding her is something that I've, you know, it's like a partnership that's developed. It feels good, but, you know, I just see it as doing my job and I try and keep it as simple as I can, you know?
Well, I mean, for a while, it's been an event every time she runs. So what's different from your perspective when she runs versus other races that you run?
Well, the expectation is that she will win, of course. So there's a huge amount of, I wouldn't say it's pressure. The pressure builds, you know, and it's the expectation. There's so much expectation that, and the reality is, Barry, she just doesn't. And, you know, I really do tend to ride her arrogantly because, you know, I know what she's capable of doing. And sometimes when the barrier draw comes out, I will get a little nervous about how I think the race might be run. And other times I just feel with confidence that, you know, all I have to do is really just relax and go around and all will be sweet. But there's so many variables in horse racing, which people that don't really follow horse racing don't understand. And that's where it becomes a little bit of a, well, as you say, an event, or, you know, for me personally, you know, I feel that pressure and expectation because at the end of the day, people aren't going to accept those variables if she's beaten. They're going to want to know why. And that's something that, you know, I do think about. There's no doubt about it. But you'd be amazed how much confidence I get from her when I do climb aboard her on race day. And, you know, I tend to just relax then.
So there are no antacids involved when she runs? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I certainly get anxious, to say the least. And as the time of the race gets closer, I tend to get more and more anxious. But as I said, once I get on the horse, once I get on board Winx, you know, I do tend to relax and she relaxes me. That all comes down to the confidence that I get from her. And basically, the key to Winx is just giving her room to move. You know, I don't have to ride a fancy race on her. You know, one of my most nervous rides on her was actually the Turnbull Stakes, which was only two starts ago.
Winx is about eight off the lead around the turn. Trap for Fools has them running at the 300 metres. John Stowe back to the inside. Kings Will Dream. There's a gap for Winx. She's going to have to explode. Trap for Fools at the 200. Kings Will Dream back to the inside. Winx down the middle. Kings Will Dream at the 100. It's getting desperate. Now Winx is storming home. Winx over the top. Oh, she's too good. The card beater. Winx has won it by a length.
I was caught up on the inside and I had no sort of way of manoeuvring myself to the outside of the horses or the opposition, and the pace was very slow and it developed into a sprint home. And halfway through the race I was concerned that, you know, an early decision of mine might bring her unstuck, but like always she came through with flying colours.
What makes your chemistry with her different from the other horses you ride?
Well, I ride a lot of horses, Barry. You know, I'm probably riding, you know, 800 to 1,000 horses a year, give or take. And, you know, in that a lot of the horses just really ride once or twice or a few times. But with Winx, you know, I think it's the longevity. Well, she's won 29 straight. Of those, I've won 27 of them. And plus another win on her earlier on in her career. So I've won 28 races on her from 29 rides. There wouldn't be many horses I've ridden in my career. In fact, I don't think there's any horse I've ridden that often in my career. So when you ride a horse that often and ride a horse, you know, over a period of 4 years, which has been happening with Winx, you know, you tend to develop relationships as you would with a person.
We're chatting here on In the Gate with jockey Hugh Bowman, whose riding career will almost inevitably be defined by riding the currently three-time Australian Horse of the Year, Winx, who, incredibly, is preparing for her eight-year-old season. Now, you had to serve a suspension around this time last year for a racing incident unrelated to Winx, but Winx was supposed to start during that time. Rather than put another rider on her, Chris Waller, the trainer, simply bypassed her would-be start in the Apollo Stakes, waiting until you were available to ride. I mean, even Secretariat made the final start of his legendary career while his jockey Ron Turcotte was suspended. Eddie Maple rode the big horse that last time. So what did you think when Team Winx decided to wait until you were ready?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think if it was Winx's last race, then they would use another jockey. But the reason I think they chose not to, it was the first race of her preparation. And Chris Waller felt as though, well, you know, this race is really a stepping stone for the Group 1 race coming up, the Chipping Norton. And I think he felt, look, she doesn't need to race. We want to race, but she doesn't need to race to get her prepared for where she's headed. And therefore, he chose not to run her. For me, knowing full well that I'd be back on her, you know, I was surprised at the decision, I must admit. But I think it just goes to show the respect that the Connections do have for me and Winx as a team, and the confidence I have in her. And I guess also the ability to be able to cope with the expectation and the public interest in this particular horse. I mean, here I am talking to you guys in the United States about this Champions racehorse, and that just goes to show volumes. You could only imagine how popular she is here in our own country.
Well, I mean, speaking of competition, I know there was talk last year about possibly bringing Winx to Royal Ascot to run in the 1 mile Queen Anne. I'm a little sad, by the way, that that didn't happen. I was there that day for the Queen Anne. How serious was that consideration amongst the Connections?
That was very serious. I think that the reason Winx has been able to compete at the level she has for so long is because of Chris Waller's discipline in the management of the horse. Now, you know, you see a horse like Arrogate or a horse like even Justify this year in the United States or Enable in the UK. I mean, these horses are all capable of running ratings much better than anyone else, and Winx is in that category. But Winx has been able to run those ratings consistently for a long time, and I think that's got a lot to do with Chris's management and his discipline in not over racing her, and the fact that she hasn't travelled. And the prize money here in Australia is just amazing. Probably doesn't quite match jurisdictions like Japan or Hong Kong. Compared to the rest of the world, prize money here is really, really good. And therefore, although you'd love to race in the Queen Anne or the Arc de Triomphe or come to the Breeders' Cup, go to Dubai, we'd all love to do everything. But the reality is, you know, at what expense does that happen? And the decision was made not to go to Royal Ascot and to focus on preparing for a fourth WS Cox Plate here in Melbourne.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because her trainer, Chris Waller, said that at this point in Winx's life and career, the winning streak is more important than seeking overseas competition. How do you feel about that?
I haven't thought about that, Barry, to be honest. I think the horse's well-being is first and foremost, and we're certainly all on the same page to that. You know, I'd love nothing more than to see Winx coming up there straight at Royal Ascot and taking on the best in Europe and possibly the best in America if they were to come across. But it's a long way to go. It's a huge ask for the horse. And, you know, that there could easily be problems with travel sickness or... I just think there's more to be risked than there is to be gained by making that decision. And like I said, we'd love to go to Dubai or England or America. But for Winx, I don't think it's going to make her any more famous than she already is. I don't think she needs to go there to prove herself, and that might be argued differently by other people, but really, that doesn't matter.
So how's her energy level right now?
Yeah, I think she's very similar to last year, Barry. She had a first barrier trial at Rose Hill where she actually is stabled, and yeah, she was very enthusiastic over the final stage of that trial. She was a bit fractious in the barriers, which I haven't seen those tendencies for a couple of preparations now. So that tells me she's excited and that nervous energy is really coming to the fore in her body. And she's a very relaxed individual these days. So when I ride her in a track gallops, she's working really well, but she's settling down after her work comfortably and just basically getting on with business.
Since we don't have barrier trials here in the United States, can you just explain for our audience the difference between a barrier trial and a race?
The only difference is a barrier trial is not competitive. So it is a technique used here in Australia, which is very good for our two-year-olds in the education of them. So by the time they get to the races, they've already experienced jumping out of the barriers with other horses, all ridden by jockeys. Barrier trials must be ridden by jockeys. And
barriers are what we in the States would call the starting gate.
Yeah, exactly, the starting stalls. So they're used, one, for educational purposes, to get the horses educated when they're young, and jockeys, of course, and also as horses develop or mature, a great tool to get a horse to really use that nervous energy without being under race day pressure, and they're used quite regularly here in Australia.
You know, her races are on in the middle of the night here in the United States, and yet she was voted by American voters as well as worldwide as the winner of the Vox Populi Award, given by the connections of the great Secretariat. What does Winx mean to you?
Well, I mean, she's a once-in-a-lifetime horse, Barry, and, you know, she's the type of horse you dream of seeing. You dream of just, you know, as a racing enthusiast, she's the type of horse that you just, you want to be around when they're racing. The fact that I've been such an integral part of her career is something that I don't think I've really computed in my own mind at this stage, and I think it'll be 4 or 5 years after her retirement that it'll really start to sink in to me just how special she is and what she's done for me as a human being and as a jockey.
Well, we look forward to seeing how her final season unfolds, a season that will inevitably be etched in your mind and those of racing fans forever. And we thank you, Mr. Bowman, for a few minutes for sharing her with us.
You're very welcome. It's been an absolute privilege to be a part of it, and really appreciate you ringing me up and having me on the show.
We're going to take a short break here on In the Gate. Then, how the FBI here in the States once became the owner of a racehorse, and they weren't interested in sitting in an owner's box and wearing seersucker suits either. We'll have that story when we come back. Welcome back to the In the Gate podcast. This year is the 30th anniversary of when a racehorse was part of a sting operation by the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigations. This story is a cross between the movies Argo with Ben Affleck and The Sting with Paul Newman and Robert Redford, and it was a story recently spotlighted on the Thoroughbred Racing Commentary website. The episode happened in 1989 at Finger Lakes in upstate New York. The FBI had gotten a tip that the drugging of horses and fixing of races were going on at Finger Lakes. Naturally, the Bureau wasn't going to just go in there and announce that they were investigating the matter, so they had to go undercover. Now, we all know that racetracks are full of Damon Runyon-esque characters, and it wouldn't be that hard for an FBI operative to become one of those characters. There was just one problem. In order to have credibility, the agent had to have a reason to be there. Basically, he had to have a horse, and the horse had to have a trainer. The horse was a 4-year-old filly named Zach Regard, Zachregard, all one word. And once she was transferred from Kentucky up to Finger Lakes, her trainer was Robert Fieldhouse, and we are pleased to have Mr. Fieldhouse with us here on In the Gate to pick up the story. So let's start where you enter the picture. Tell us about how and by whom you were approached to train this filly.
Someone called me and asked me if I had an empty stall I could put a horse in. And I just happened to have one. I said, yeah, I've got stalls. Well, we got this horse coming in. Would you be interested in training? I said, yeah, I guess so. So it kind of started that way. And so I got the horse, and a couple days later, I met the owner, supposedly owner. And we had a good talk. I told him what my rates were and this, that, and the other thing. And he filled me in a little bit on the horse, and we went from there.
Now, normally when you have a new client, I presume you want to get to know that person. What were you told about the connections?
Yeah, I wasn't told anything. Actually, he represented himself, and I told him, you know, you have to get a set of colors and you have to get your license. He says, yeah, no problem. He says, I'll go up to the secretary's office and put in for that stuff now. He says, I'll have colors registered so we can run the horse, and I'll get my license and all, so you'd be all set.
And you didn't really ask about, like, what he did, where he came from, or anything?
He told me, he says, I'm from Mobile, Alabama, and he says, I have a business with, I think it was like spare airplane parts. He says, I have airplane parts that I sell.
Well, he went by the name of M. Grace. His real name ended up being Mike Glass.
Mike, okay, he did go. Mike Grace was what he was introduced to me as.
What did you know about the horse?
Nothing. She'd come in. She looked sound. I checked her over. She didn't have anything wrong with it that I could see. So I just started galloping her and checking her out to find out what, you know, what class I'd have to race her in.
Now, you told me off air that you served for 8 years in the Air Force during the Bay of Pigs. So tell us what you did in the Air Force.
I was a hydraulic mechanic, mainly, and I got in the outfit with the people that were kind of running the Bay of Pigs thing, and I was still hired just as a mechanic, a hydraulics person, but we did go to Guatemala to work on the B-26s and things like that. It was an outfit that was all 50 or 60 people, and we were in it for probably 4 years. Setting everything up, and then, of course, after the Bay of Pigs. And
so you served your country for 8 years. So what would you have thought had the FBI actually told you what it was doing on behalf of the government?
Well, of course, I didn't know, and I think that's the way they wanted it. But if they would have come up and asked me, I don't know what I would have said, really, at the time.
How could that be?
Well, it's just something, you know, it's a strange thing to ask me. Maybe in the first place, if I was doing something like that and other people at the racetrack knew about it, I'd kind of be blackballed real quick, you know. Hey, watch this guy. He's working for the FBI. You know, that's not a very good deal.
We're talking here on In the Gate with retired trainer Robert Fieldhouse, who trained a filly named Zach Regard up at Finger Lakes Downs in the late 80s. Zach Regard was being used to lure potential race fixers so they would have to deal with the filly's connections, who, of course, were FBI agents. So how good was the filly? And there's a reason I ask that.
She was just kind of a normal filly. I'm trying to think what her race record was. How many times I ran her, if she won, or how many times, or anything. I can't really remember just off the top of my head.
Well, she ran 36 times at Finger Lakes in 1989 and 1990, the years that the sting operation happened. In those 36 starts, she won 6 times and finished in the money 13 times. So, in your mind, how good was she?
She probably raced at what level? Between 3,000 to 5,000 claimer?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, she was just a decent filly. I had no idea she'd been there that long.
Well, here's the thing. The sting operation, you know, happened back when horses would run every 2 to 3 weeks. Now, I'm not saying you would know anybody who would do this, but if you were going to try to fix a race, would you really want to deal with a horse that won 6 times? Is that the horse you would try to fix a race with?
No. Definitely not. No. The horse was just a reason to get the owner on the track and up at the grandstand and up at the windows to see who was betting horses and stuff. And I don't know exactly. They didn't explain everything to me when it was all over with, but there were some people up there that were maybe placing some larger bets in Las Vegas on horses, and they wanted to make sure, well, they wanted to see if there was any connection between the racetrack and Vegas as far as the horses, who they belonged to, who was putting the money up and stuff like that.
If you were the FBI and you wanted to try to rat out the fixers, the would-be fixers, you would probably, I would think, want a horse that wasn't all that good. so that you'd get them to come to you and say, well, maybe you can go a little easy on that horse. But you wouldn't do that with a horse that wins six times. So the horse seemed to be almost too good for what they were trying to do.
Yeah, I don't think the horse had anything to do with them trying to catch anybody doing something. In other words, they were not going to come up to me or the owner and say anything to them about the horse. The horse was just a means to get these people on the grounds legally so that they had an owner's badge on when they walked around in the backside or the front side, so people could say that, yeah, they were here legitimately. He owns a horse. Bob Fieldhouse trains it. That's all. It was just a means to get him on. He probably could have come in without it being an owner, but he was a new person there, so people would have kind of questioned it a little bit.
As it turns out, two trainers and a jockey were indicted, but in July of 1990, a federal judge dismissed the charges since there wasn't enough evidence to convict them. So the operation yielded nothing except some wins and some money for the FBI. Now, how do you feel now looking back on the whole thing?
Well, it was kind of strange.
I think strange would be a good word. I mean, now you realize what you were a part of, even though you didn't know. Like, have you thought about that over the years?
Yeah, that's the thing. I had no idea. You know, they cold-watered me pretty easy. I mean, I had no inkling or no suspicion about these people were not who they said they were, and the horse was not this, not that. Like I say, it just never really registered with me. And when I find out all about it, it was kind of a joke. I kind of laughed with him. You know, I said, well, you know, we didn't set the world on fire anyway, and she was here long enough for you guys to be around and find out what you could. But as far as I know, I don't think they found out anything with Mike Grace or the horse or with me.
But you did win a few races and made some decent money, so there's that.
Yeah, that was good.
Well, thank you so much for a few minutes for sharing this rather unique story with us, sir.
Well, I wish I could have been more helpful, but, you know, we're going back quite a few years, too. You're talking, what, 30, 35 years?
Yeah, I was a young man back then. I tried not to think about it that way.
I was, too.
Our thanks to Robert Fieldhouse and to Hugh Bowman. I've never covered the Eclipse Awards, the Oscars of horse racing. I'm not sent there as part of my job because this podcast is a hobby, not a company directive. I've been close before, but wound up grasping at straws. 3 years ago, on the Saturday night that American Pharoah was honored, I was actually in the village at Gulfstream Park because my cousin's daughter had a wedding rehearsal dinner. I thought about crashing the award show on a lark. Then just this year for my day job, it looked as though I'd have a shoot in Miami on horse racing's big awards day. What a wonderful coincidence. I'd do my job and then report from Gulfstream afterward. Hip, hip, hooray. But the interview subject canceled just 3 days before the shoot. A family emergency scuttled the sked. And so the quest to report from the Eclipse Awards goes on. Perhaps I'll get there once before I'm dead. You can get us on our YouTube channel by searching In the Gate Podcast. You can get us on SoundCloud as well. Get us at the iTunes Store or TuneIn.com. You can get us on that little pink podcatcher app on your phone you didn't even know you had. And now you can subscribe to In the Gate in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. For the full In the Gate experience, subscribe now in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. And you can follow me on Twitter at B. Abrams Voice or on Facebook at Barry Abrams Voice. That's In the Gate for this week. I'm Barry Abrams. We'll see you next time.